Hello, everyone. This is Lawrence Taylor speaking, and I am pastor of the Kenilworth Baptist Church in Brooklyn, New York. And today is another session on reflection on Scripture. So I'm so glad that you could be part of this. Today, I want to talk about another controversial issue. Last week, I spoke about Kyrie Irving and how he was being treated. And I got a chance to view the film that was at the center of this controversy. It's from Hebrews to Negroes. Ronald Dalton, I believe, is the narrator. He's on Twitter, that is Dalton. And he says a lot about the issue of Black Hebrews. The premise of the film, From Hebrews to Negroes, is that the original Hebrews were people of color. The film doesn't argue that they were just exclusively Black, but it argues that they were a dark people. That includes, of course, Africans. It would also talk about Blacks of the diaspora, whether here in the United States or in the Caribbean, Latin America. But it also argued that the Jews who are, as we traditionally call Jews today from Europe, they really were not the original Hebrews and not the Hebrews of the Bible. And that in terms of their religion, that came later. They came into this later on. The film has been classified as anti-Semitic. Let me weigh in on this. I think it would be fair to say that the film is against the Ashkenazis. And let me tell you what who the Ashkenazis are. Ashkenazis are European Jews in comparison to Sephardic Jews. We got Ashkenazis and we got Sephardic Jews. Sephardic Jews are the darker Jews. The Ashkenazis, the white Jews, the European Jews. So the film is really against Ashkenazism, and really not against the religion of the Hebrews. So in that respect, the film is not anti-Semitic, although it is certainly opposed to Ashkenazism. The claim that these are the original Jews, the Ashkenazis, the film debunks. Now, there are a whole lot of inaccuracies in this film, historical inaccuracies, and some real gross generalities. But I think you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I believe it's an irrefutable fact that the original Jews of the Old Testament were a people of color. They were not Europeans. Here's an interesting fact. The word Europe is not even mentioned in the Old Testament. Africa is mentioned, Ethiopia, we have the term Cushite, we have the Queen of Sheba. I mean, all this is Afro-centered, but nothing about Europe. So those ancient communities that we have in the Bible, such as the Assyrians, such as the Philistines, the Canaanites, and I believe the Canaanites were dark-skinned people. Okay. None of these people were Eurocentric. They weren't of European extraction. Let me call your attention to a passage in the Bible. And again, I'm weighing in on this film from Hebrews to Negroes, something that I believe is worthwhile seeing. And I'm saying that the film is not necessarily anti-Semitic, or while it is anti-Ashkenazism. Okay. In the book of Genesis, chapter 10, the very first verse reads, "Now these are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japhet, the sons of Noah, and sons were born to them after the flood." So this is after the flood, and then we're given the genealogy of the three sons of Noah. I'm going to focus on one son, and that's Ham. Now, we all have heard about the curse of Ham. By the way, Ham, the curse of Ham in the Bible was used to justify slavery, Jim Crow, and colonization. It's used for that purpose. What they argued is that those who are Hamitic, descendants of Ham, were destined to be slaves, servants, and inferior in intellect. And here's something I think is very important to note. Unfortunately, many whites are willing to accept blacks if they're entertainers, if they're like ball players, singers, and all that kind of stuff. They're willing to accept that. But when it comes to the intellect, black person being highly intelligent and being in a position of leadership, well, that they're not willing to accept. Just look at the recent senatorial race in Georgia. Herschel Walker should have lost by an astronomical number because there is no one that was as unfit for office as Herschel Walker. I mean, just listen to the man talk. He was just an embarrassment. He was highly inarticulate. His ideas were totally incoherent, didn't make any sense at all. He talked about werewolves and vampires and all that other kind of nutty stuff. Talked about getting bad air from China, sending us our bad air. I mean, just stuff that just didn't make any sense at all. And I can guarantee you, if there were two white guys running, and if Herschel Walker was white, he would not have gotten the support that he got. But what does that say? It tells me that people just don't vote merely party lines, but that there are a lot of whites who are comfortable with a black man of that caliber. When Barack Obama became president, a lot of white folks went apoplectic. They went nuts. They had a cabal even while he was taking his inauguration, and they met just a few miles away from where the inauguration was. The inauguration, I'm talking about Republican leaders, plotting to undermine his administration before anything. There were two political parties that came about at the same time. The Tea Party, which was a racist party, You know, people argue it was a racist party. And of course, birtherism. And birtherism wasn't started by Donald Trump, although Donald Trump did take the vanguard. He took the lead over that, and that's how he got his entree into politics on Fox News, because he was promoting birtherism. Birtherism, from its very core, is racist, pure racist, because what does birtherism really say? It says, listen, you whites, you don't have to worry, because you really don't have a black president, because he's not even a citizen of the United States. So don't you worry about it. And that's why that movement had such momentum, especially among those in the Republican Party. But let's point out that you can't accept a guy like Barack Obama because he's just too intelligent and too articulate. I'm not getting into his policies, but I'm just talking about the fact that he represented something of, you know, that was certainly positive in terms of blacks not falling into the stereotype. Raphael Warnock, great example. Well, Raphael Warnock has a PhD from Union Theological Seminary. I know because when I was there, he was a student there. So I know that he got his PhD from Union Theological Seminary. And yet they couldn't accept him. They wanted a buffoon instead, because those are the kind of roles that they can accept. Well, let us note in this passage in Genesis chapter 10, we have Ham. Now, Ham was black, and his descendants were black. So in Genesis chapter 10, beginning at verse 6, it reads, "The sons of Ham were Cush and Mesraim and Put and Canaan." Oh, no, that's why I say the Canaanites, the original Canaanites in that land that we now know as Israel, the original inhabitants of that land were black, because Canaan was the son of Ham. Now, let us take note, Cush. Cush refers to East Africa. So we're really talking about Ethiopia, the Cushites. Mesraim. Mesraim is the Hebrew word for Egypt. So here we're talking about the Egyptians. Okay, and the Egyptians were black. How do I know the Egyptians were black? The original Egyptians. Well, one of the earliest Europeans to go into Egypt was the Greek historian Herodotus. And in his work on the Persian Wars, he has a discursus where he discusses his visit to Egypt. And he describes the Egyptians. He says they were melanos. He's describing their skin, because Herodotus wrote in Greek. He says they were melanos. Melanos means they were black in skin. That's how he describes them. He says they had broad noses, and they had woolly hair. So that is how Herodotus describes the Egyptians. Now, I grant you, you have a variety of Egyptians. They weren't all of one color, but let's remember we have groups that come into Egypt later on. Hyksos, for instance, who come in, who are Asiatic. But some of the original rulers of Egypt were Nubian kings. And we even found 12 grades of Nubian kings who were Egyptian rulers. So we know that the Egyptians were black. By the way, later on, another Greek historian by the name of Diodorus used a similar language to describe them. Aesop, if you're familiar with Aesop fables. Aesop is described by Aristotle as having black skin, woolly hair, and a brown nose. So Aesop, the one who told fables, he was a black man. Probably a history that you don't get in your history books. But here we have also Put. Put refers, I believe, to also parts of East Africa. And Canaan is, of course, referring to what we now call the Middle East. what we now call the Middle East. Late Ali Mazuri, who was a political scientist and historian, believed that that region was also part of Africa. That is what they call the Middle East. Don't forget, the term Middle East is not used until the late 19th century to describe that area. And again, Herodotus includes that region in what he referred to as Africa. Now, Herodotus did not use the term Africa. He used the term Libya, but he was referring to that whole area of Africa. All right, so we see that we have a number of groups that come from Ham. And if you just look down at verse 8, now Cush, don't forget, Cushite, Ethiopian, became the father of Nimrod. He became a mighty one in the earth. So Nimrod was an engineer. Of course, he's the guy who leads the building of the Tower of Babel, which, of course, leads to trouble. But nevertheless, he was a builder. And did you know Moses was married to an Ethiopian woman? Well, let me show that to you. In the book of Numbers, chapter 12, it says in verse 1, "Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married." But he had married a Cushite woman. Now, note, it's repeated. She was a Cushite. It says it twice there. Miriam and Aaron, being the older sister and brother of Moses, became upset because their brother married this dark-skinned woman. They got upset about this. Now, they didn't get upset because she was a Gentile, because she wasn't a Gentile. She was Jewish. And let me tell you why I know she was Jewish. Because God had already given the command to Israel that they were not to marry outside their religion. And Moses was the lawgiver. So Moses, who's the lawgiver, who tells the Hebrews you're not to marry outside your religion, would not then marry outside his religion. So she had to be a Jew. So here we got an Ethiopian Jew. And the word Cushite is translated in the Septuagint as Ethiopian, an Ethiopian woman. It's mind-boggling to me. I went to a very racist Bible college, Philadelphia College of Bible, where they tried to tell us she wasn't black, but they really couldn't, I mean, anything but black. She couldn't have been that. All right, so what else was she if the Bible says she was a Cushite? Because Ethiopian doesn't even necessarily refer to the region where she comes from. The literal meaning of the Ethiopian, and this is how they translated the word Cush, it means one burnt of skin. So what else could she have been? All right, so it's just utterly ridiculous to make those arguments. She was a Cushite. And why else did they get married? Now, I'm going to prove in this text that this Jewish black woman was just that, a black woman. Because it says in verse 12, "And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well?" And here are the scary words. "And the Lord heard it." Those are scary words. Because they were murmuring against God's man. All because of his wife. And it says, "Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth." So Moses didn't lash out. He knew that his brother and his sister were criticizing him for his marriage, so he didn't speak out against it. But God does. Because suddenly the Lord said to Moses and Aaron and to Miriam, "You three come out to the tent of meeting." So the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent. And he called Aaron and Miriam. When they had both come forward, I'm sure they're shaken by now. He said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I will speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household." Now, you know what God is saying to them? Say, look, when I speak to a prophet, I come to him in a dream. He has a vision. But that doesn't happen with Moses. Moses is not just a prophet. Moses is like the prophet of prophets. God is saying, Moses is my main man. I mean, that's in essence what God is saying. Moses, he's my main man. So then he says in verse 8, because he says, when I speak to Moses, I speak to him face to face. Now, it doesn't mean that God's looking at Moses, Moses is looking at God. Obviously, God is looking at Moses. Moses can't see God. But the point is, God is speaking to him directly. And so it says in verse 8, "With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly, and not in a dark saying, not in an enigma. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses?" You know, sometimes I try to use this in the church and say, when you speak against the pastor, you know, God gets angry, but they remind me, you're no Moses. So let's note, so the anger of the Lord burned against them and he departed. That is, God departed. He left. So they're in trouble now. But when the cloud had withdrawn, now this is the part I want you to look at very carefully. From over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous. Now look at this, people, as white as snow. And Aaron turned towards Miriam. Behold, she was leprous. So there's some kind of special leprosy that God visits upon Miriam. But let us know what he does. She was so proud of her light skin that she murmured and spoke against the wife of Moses because she was a black woman. And this is what God just does. He says to Miriam, "You're so proud of your lightness, then I'm going to make you as white as snow." Let's see if you're proud of that. And so that's what happened. God brings this peculiar kind of leprosy on her. So now note the change in tone with their brother. Then Aaron, verse 11, said to Moses, "Oh, my Lord, I beg you, do not account this sin to us in which we have acted foolishly and in which we have sinned. Oh, do not let her be like one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes from the mother's womb." So Moses cried out to the Lord saying, "Oh Lord, heal her, I pray." So Moses acts like an intercessor. He's the mediator, and he mediates or pleads on behalf of his rebellious sister. The Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, would she not bear the shame for 7 days? Let her be shut up for 7 days outside the camp, and afterwards she may be received again." So God said, look, I'm not just going to heal her, all right? If she'd been spat upon in the face, she would have to bear that shame. So she's going to bear the shame for what she did, but I'll heal her after 7 days. Now, the lesson that we learn here is that, of course, God is opposed to racism. He detests racism. But the other lesson we learned is that we got black Jews here, dark-skinned Jews. And Aaron had to learn that lesson. Now, I'm not saying that Miriam and Aaron were Europeans or whites. That's not what I'm saying. They were just lighter than this woman. And they didn't like her because of her dark skin. Now, there's a lot more I want to say about this, so I'm going to continue it on our next podcast. Thank you for listening.